Thank you for allowing me to share this happy occasion with you, and thanks to your dean for that generous introduction. When things go wrong, people do call me. I have received several texts already about the lack of air conditioning in a building named for an air conditioning company. Beyond my jurisdiction. To all of you, as I will discuss, there's very little in life that is more important to me than the tradition of American law. I want to speak with you today about several lawyers, but first let me start out speaking a little bit about your dean. One of my passions in life is pursuing the American ideal of equal justice under law, and your dean is not only a distinguished legal scholar and a wise steward of this institution, she also contributes her expertise to the public in ways that make our entire state a more just place for us all. She has advocated for, testified before Chief Judge Lipman's task force to expand access to legal services. She has spoken eloquently around the state about closing the justice gap, that is the gap between the need for legal services and the services that are actually available. And as you have all learned, the law guarantees a lot of rights and protections. But in practice, if you don't have access to an attorney, those guarantees sometimes are very hollow. The right to a lawyer is the right that enables you to protect every other right. And Dean Artarian has been an important voice in our efforts to ensure that no one experiences troubles in their life, whether it's with health care or housing or education, for a lack of a lawyer, and I thank you for your service and for your advocacy work. And I thank all of the faculty, all the administrators, all of the advisors, and all of the staff at this great institution, the College of Law. But I first want to take a moment to once again congratulate the families of the graduates. As noted before, none of us gets here on our own. There's a phenomenon in the United States now that is pretty disturbing. We call it the self-made man that worships his creator. Not God, the self-made man that worships his creator. None of us get here alone. And the family members that are here to support you, you have gotten these young men and women to where they are today, and in some cases, not so young men and women, which is always a pleasure for me to see. You produce great leaders in government, and you have contributed to their success, and I thank you for being here with us. To let you know how important the profession of law is to me, you should know that my grandfather never finished elementary school. My father went to law school on the GI Bill for free, worked his way up to being a successful corporate lawyer, and lived to see his son become the Attorney General of the state of New York. And then his older brother, at the age of 60, went back to law school because he'd always wanted to go to law school and graduate. He was a college professor, but he decided he had needed a new challenge, and he graduated from law school at the age of 63. The law is a very important part of my family's traditions. And Syracuse College of Law has produced some of the best people that I've worked with. I have to say that you mentioned before, probably my closest ally among all the attorneys general around the United States, Beau Biden, a proud graduate, and you may have heard of his father, Joe Biden, also works in the government, and they have been terrific allies in all of my efforts to hold accountable those who have done bad things to not just to individual people and families, but have hurt our state and our economy. Beau has been an absolute leader in this effort, and his father is a pleasure to work with every day. You also have many College of Law graduates throughout the Attorney General's office. The head of my Binghamton office is Jim Schumacher. We have the Public Integrity Officer here in Syracuse, Maureen McPherson. And the lawyers that you produce here make our state and our nation better. And I've now learned that with your relationship with the courts in England, you actually have people who make the world a better place. So I want to say, as you embark on your career, class of 2014, I'm so proud of the fact that I've been there, and I'm proud to speak to you as not so much as your attorney general, but as a fellow attorney. I take great pride in being an American lawyer. Our nation is rooted in the idea of equal justice under law and the rule of law. We don these robes, and it's an honorific occasion because, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great honor to be a lawyer in the United States of America. What made us different at the founding of this nation than from any other nation that existed up till then was the commitment, already acknowledged, but first written down by the great lawyer, Thomas Jefferson, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Great words, but let me remind you of the American tradition, because those words, as they say, were contradicted by the facts on the ground. When they were written, slavery was widespread, women couldn't vote in many places, they couldn't own property. Jews and other non-Christians suffered under a whole array of discriminatory disability laws. And the history of our nation has been a history of striving to make Thomas Jefferson's words ever more true, to expand the vision of a nation created with the notion of equality and justice for all, and it's always required struggle. The American quest for justice has engaged great lawyers in each generation to make our laws more just, and you now join their ranks. You now have the potential to contribute towards this essential mission that we take on as a nation. We know that it took until 1848 in the great New York town of Seneca Falls for a group of women to issue a declaration that, quote, all men and women are created equal. It took until 1865 for us to abolish slavery, and I think some of you are familiar with the great lawyer, Abraham Lincoln, who was key in that effort. And it took until 1964 for a president to sign legislation that essentially outlawed segregation. And as we are here on the 60th anniversary of Brown v. Board of Education and the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, I'm going to speak a little bit more about that. But each of you is now called to join this wonderful tradition of American lawyers making our words ever more true, making our country ever more just. And I want to talk about a few other lawyers that I hold out to people in my office as role models. The work you do as a lawyer can take many forms. Some of you will draft great legal documents, some of you will draft laws and statutes and regulations, but you will all have the obligation to see that the rule of law is fairly applied, and this is the magic of our system. Consider the great lawyer John Adams, not in his role as president, but his legacy as a lawyer. My new colleagues, in 1770, British Captain Thomas Preston and several other British soldiers were indicted for murder in their role in what was called the Boston Massacre. And if you've ever a defense lawyer, once your client's crime is called a massacre, you've already lost the first round of the fight, but you'll see that in practice. These soldiers were charged with killing five civilians by firing shots into a crowd enraged by the British occupation of Massachusetts. The vehement and venomous anti-British sentiment in Boston was so great at the time that no lawyer would agree to defend the accused except John Adams. Despite the fact that he was an outspoken critic of British occupation, despite the fact that defending these soldiers jeopardized his career and his livelihood, his sense of duty as an American lawyer, as an attorney, whose legal training preceded the founding of the Republic, this is our tradition. Our work as lawyers preceded the founding of the Republic, and the Republic would not have been founded but for the training you have now gone through as lawyers. So John Adams' sense of duty led him to conduct an extraordinary trial, and his summation is one of the great pieces of trial work in American history. I commend it to you. He stated, after he made a very persuasive case for acquittal or for reducing charges from murder to manslaughter, he said, "The law, in all vicissitudes of government fluctuations, of the passions or flights of enthusiasm, will preserve a steady, undeviating course. It will not bend to the uncertain wishes, imaginations, and wanton tempers of men. He agreed to defend the most reviled people in his community because of his commitment to the rule of law and our national commitment to equal justice is dependent on the rule of law and, ladies and gentlemen, on the right to representation by an attorney. So you should all be very proud of the tradition which you enter. You know, sometimes people make lawyer jokes or pick on lawyers. It has given me great pleasure throughout my career when one of them gets in trouble and comes crawling in to get a lawyer. And I have to say that from my point of view, there really is no greater tradition. Your responsibility is to represent your clients, but it is also to uphold the American notion of equal justice under law. And as the legacy of Jefferson and Adams, Lincoln instructs us, the nation of laws is not static. This is the genius of America. Our Constitution and our laws are designed to grow, to evolve, to be changed. And you are here to preserve the rule of law with an understanding that it is a living, breathing, growing entity. The law in America is designed to grow and change, to reflect our ever-expanding understanding of justice and equality. So let me discuss now something that is important to me, someone who was a personal hero of mine, another lawyer not as famous as those I've cited so far. When lawyers do work, some of them are there at the conclusion of the effort, at the moment of the Declaration of Independence, at the moment of the Emancipation Proclamation. But it's important to remember all of the lawyers who took the steps to get us to the point where these great achievements could take place. So the lawyer I want to talk to you about now is a man whose picture is behind my desk in the Office of Attorney General. His name is Charles Hamilton Houston. He was an African-American lawyer, very successful lawyer in the 1920s and 30s in Washington, D.C. And back then, under the Supreme Court's ruling in Plessy v. Ferguson, segregation was legal. Separate but equal was the doctrine that empowered our federal, state, and local governments to enact and enforce what we call the Jim Crow laws, separate railroad cars, separate restaurants, separate bathrooms. These were all constitutionally permissible. Charles Houston was a very tough lawyer. He was the dean at Howard Law School and got the law school's accreditation. His students referred to him as having been a very strict disciplinarian, but his vision of the law was that it was always meant to evolve. And in 1934, he sat down and wrote a memo to the NAACP setting forth a plan to end segregation in America, to bring cases, to advance legislation, to raise public awareness with the long-term objective of overturning Plessy. His plan was adopted. He received a budget of $10,000. And ladies and gentlemen, that's how the American civil rights movement started. It's a very small number of people. He picked cases, and it's a wonderful story for lawyers, starting with challenges to segregated graduate schools in boarding states. Houston knew if he tried to integrate elementary schools, that was not the right place to start. He'd have riots. So he won cases, for example, against the University of Maryland that said, either you have to create a law school just for this black graduate, or you have to let him in. And they said, okay, all right, we'll let him in. And this is how he started chipping away at the wall of segregation. He trained and mentored the lawyers who carried this out. William Hastie, Robert Carter, and his protege and law student, Thurgood Marshall. And the most important thing to me about Charles Houston is that he spent his life knowing that he probably would not live to see the conclusion of this campaign to advance the American law towards our quintessential mission of greater justice. He did not live to see the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He did not live to see his protege overturn Plessy when he argued Brown v. Board of Education. But he had the vision and the confidence in our system of laws and our system of popular democracy to dedicate himself to these principles that I commend to you as the guideposts for your life. In our world as lawyers, we face challenges that require us to sustain long-term struggles. It's easy to do good work for one case or one year. Sustaining your commitment to the law, the rule of law, and to the American thirst for equal justice is something that is worth spending many years of your life on. I wish you great success. I know there will be lawyers here who we will look back and say, wow, I'm honored to have been in the room with that person. And sometimes you can't tell who that is. Sometimes you can't tell who that is. I assure you, when I was graduating from law school, I was not at the top of the list to become Attorney General of New York State if my classmates had taken a vote. But talents come out in response to challenges. So, fellow lawyers, accept the challenges. Challenge yourselves. That is one of the gifts of being an attorney. You will love this work, and I know you will love the bar exam. So give yourselves a round of applause. Thank you.